Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Worst First, your worst favorite show on the internet, where we talk about all the worst things that have happened to us in life, and sometimes they're funny and sometimes they're sad. And today we have kind of a dark one. I have Taryn Southern here, who literally has been through hell and back. And I am so happy that you made it back.
And I'm still smiling.
And you're still smiling, and you had breast cancer.
Yeah.
And this is your 1 year remission today.
This week.
This week is your 1 year remission. Oh my God, you guys, I'm so happy for her. I was telling her that, like, it was so weird at the time that she got diagnosed, like a month before another girlfriend of ours had gotten diagnosed with breast cancer. And then a month before that, another girlfriend of mine, all in their 30s, got diagnosed with lymphoma. And you guys all survived, which is great. And you all beat it. So I'm so grateful for that. And I'm so happy you're here and healthy and you look beautiful.
So good to see you again.
So good to see you. But I want to know everything. Speaking of worst first, so this is a worst first time getting cancer. We're going to talk about, like, how did you know? How did you discover? Like, you're a young woman. You don't have the BRCA gene.
No. And I had already done a gene test just the year earlier because I'm really into bio tracking and all of that
stuff.
Yeah,
you are.
I do have a family history of breast cancer. So I'd done the test and everything was clear.
So ladies, that is one thing that you can do is go to your OBGYN and get a BRCA gene test. And that will tell you most likely if you're to develop breast cancer so you can be proactive about it. So that's something everyone should do. But you had it done and you were negative.
Negative.
And then you still developed breast cancer.
Correct.
Okay, so what was the first signs?
So what's interesting is I had gone to the gynecologist a few months earlier, done my pap smear, and they do the breast exam.
Right.
And everything was totally fine. This is a few months earlier.
What?
Nothing out of sorts.
My health anxiety is just like, go to the doctor every day. Go every day.
Every day.
Prescription plan. Get on a fucking plan. Go every day. Yeah. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No, I get it. Yeah. And then a few months later, I was premiering my documentary at the Tribeca Film Festival.
The I Am Human, right?
I Am Human.
Yeah, yes. She's also a fucking filmmaker. She's amazing. Watch I Am Human.
Thank you.
And so then go ahead.
And I got really sick, as one does when you finish a big project and you've been stressed and not sleeping. Get super sick. Feel this massive, like, ping pong ball sized lump in my underarm, like in my armpit.
Were you just like shouting?
And there was no pain associated with it. It was just this big ball. And I knew that no pain is a bad sign.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, you want it to be painful. If it's painful, it's usually a cyst
right.
or something benign. So, and I knew this. And so I was like, oh no. What?
It was a ping pong ball
It was a ping pong ball. I said, where did this thing come from?
Under your armpit.
Yeah. So I got back to LA a few days later, went into the breast cancer center at St. John Providence. They were like, this can't be anything if it just popped up out of nowhere. I said, please biopsy it. They said, you're too young. It doesn't make sense for it to be anything. Why don't you come back if it's still there in a month or two? So they biopsy it. And 3 days later, I get the call that it's stage 3 breast cancer.
Are you fucking kidding me? And they wanted you to come back? You had to tell them to biopsy it?
Yeah.
What the fuck? My health anxiety is just whoop, like...
Well, yeah, I was 33. I think they were looking at me like, there's just no way. That it's probably just an irregular cyst.
I'm in shock right now.
But it's also that the whole adage of trust your body.
You know, you didn't feel good either?
Didn't feel good. The whole thing was just bizarre. I thought, how could this be so big and me not notice it? But yeah. I was also under a lot of stress. So I was like, I'm not paying attention to my body. And yeah, I was pretty stunned.
And so they call you. How do they tell you when they call you that you have cancer?
The oncologist said, do you have a primary care doctor here in LA? And I just switched insurances. So I said, no, I actually don't. And she said, well, I normally call the primary care doctor first, but you do have cancer and need you to come in immediately.
Immediately? Get out of the nail salon,
the
wherever
day.
You are. Oh, okay.
The next day. And so I went home that day and did what every newly minted cancer patient did. I drank.
Drank. Oh,
I mean,
honey.
It's funny. At the time, my two best girlfriends came over, like, with a bunch of liquor, and we're like, they just didn't know what to do, and they were like, let's have a final party. Before.
They're like, this will kill it. They're like, fucking fireball kills everything. Pour it. Open the cyst. Open the tumor. Let's pour it down the Oh my God.
I think I only had one drink and then I was like, I don't think this is actually helping. Good for cancer.
Yeah, no, no, I'm pretty sure not. It's not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I stopped that.
Oh my God.
That was the last drink I had for a very long time.
Right.
But it was, yeah, it was pretty shocking. I didn't believe the hospital even. I made them biopsy it a second time. To make sure it hadn't been swapped with someone else's cancer cells. On accident.
And they're like, no, bitch, you got cancer.
They're like, you did. We definitely don't swap things anymore.
And then that you're like, happen. Remember when you said to wait another month? Remember that? Because I do. Forever.
Yeah.
Ew. Was it Cedars?
No, it was St. John Providence. And they ended up being amazing.
Okay.
But, you know, there's, you just have to be an advocate.
Okay, so literally the next day you have to go in. And what do you do? What's the process? You go in.
So I went in. They said,
hold your mic as close as
you
can. Sorry.
There we go. Is that better?
Yeah, it's much better.
So I go in. They tell me that it's a minimum of stage 2, stage 3, but they want to make sure it's not in other parts of my body. So I go through a battery of tests, bone scans, chest scan, brain scan. They want to make sure it hasn't metastasized to stage 4. So I do all these scans, and that process is pretty anxiety provoking because you're just waiting to find out the statistical chances of being stage 3 versus stage 4 are quite different.
Right.
And you're trying to avoid Google.
Girl, I would have WebMD'd like two. I would have been like, oh, just say cancer? Okay, all right. Well, I would have ditched the girlfriends. I would have just been Googling all night. I would have been taking weird supplements to try to kill it myself. Yeah. Like, so and you did the full scan.
I did all the scans. Everything fortunately came back negative on the other organs, other body parts.
Oh, thank Jesus.
So it was just in my lymph nodes. The cancer came back HER2 positive, which is a sort of more rare form of breast cancer, which my aunt passed away from 15, 20 years ago. There was actually no chemo that could treat HER2 positive breast cancer. Now they have this amazing new antibody drug that you have to be on for about a year.
Oh my God.
That when you combine it with chemo, it's pretty effective.
Oh my God.
But it's a very aggressive form. So that's why it was so quick.
It like takes the life out of you.
It's just fast. It's a fast growing cancer.
So, yeah. Okay. So what did your parents say? Like your mom and your dad, like, are you close with them?
They were great. My mom works in a hospital. And so she was just like immediately, you're going to be okay. You're going to get through this.
Did she cry?
We'll be there. Not on the phone with me. She was a stoic.
You called her and you're like,
maybe she did. And
you're like,
just don't
mom,
remember.
I have something to tell you.
Yes. Yes.
Was
and then
she
I
quiet?
Sent an email to all my friends. Because I didn't want to have the conversation. So I just sent an email. I thought that would be easier.
Oh my God. I'm just like feeling for you. Like that's just such an intense, like did you in your mind when you first found out, were you like, I'm going to die? Or were you like, I'm going to win? Like what went through your mind?
I was pretty stunned. I think I was pretty much like, I'm going to beat this thing, but really irritated that I knew it was going to take over a year of my life. And I remember feeling very scared about what the long-term effects of the chemotherapy, the Herceptin, Perjeta antibodies that I was taking, they're very hard on the heart, radiation, surgery. I just thought, what will this do to my body? And I kept thinking, am I taking years off my life? And that was the thing, the thought pattern that kept causing me the most anxiety, ironically. Yeah. It wasn't until I started chemo, and chemo would just kick the shit out of me every 21 days.
What is the process of that?
You go into the hospital, so you get a port implanted in your chest.
Okay.
So all the chemo can go directly to your heart.
And oh, then, it goes to your heart?
Yeah, you can't have it go.
Oh, your heart's just like, what the fuck? I don't even want any more of this moonshine. What is this? Fuck. Yeah. Just pouring it on your heart. It's the fireball.
And meanwhile, the nurses, when they hook you up to the machine, they can't even touch the outside of the chemotherapy bag because it's so poisonous.
But you're putting it in your body.
But it's going right into your heart. So I always found that a little amusing. Like, just touch the bag, just a little bit.
Oh my gosh. So you're there. Do you feel
there for
it?
For about 8 hours.
Like, it's, when it hits your heart, do you feel it?
I mean, they have you on so many steroids and anti-anxiety meds that you're kind of like
out of it.
Out of it while you're getting chemo done. But it's an 8 hour. I mean, for me anyway, I had 4 chemo drugs. So it was about 2 hours set up and then hour and a half each drug.
And how often do you do it?
Every 21 days.
And would you stay overnight at the hospital?
Mm-mm. Just have someone take you home. And then for my particular chemo, days 2, 3, and 4, I was feeling okay, and then day 5 you get punched in the stomach, and it takes about a week to recover.
So wait, what does that mean? So you get done with chemo, go home, you're fine for a couple days.
Ish, you feel not great, but, and then by day five, your whole body starts to fall apart.
What happens?
It feels like you're decaying from the inside.
It does.
It's, well, because it's killing all of your everything. Healthy cells. And it's the killing first everything. Cells to go are the stomach cells because they're constantly regenerating.
Yeah.
So, you know, your stomach is, you're throwing up, you have diarrhea.
You throw up a lot?
I mean, it's just all of it. And you're trying to take drugs to prevent the side effects from getting too bad because they don't want you to lose too much weight. So you're chasing the symptoms with different drugs. And it's like the drugs you take for throwing up can then cause you to have worse diarrhea and vice versa. So you're just on this roller coaster.
Like how many pills were you on?
I mean, I was so nauseous. It was a lot of times I would just refuse to take the pill.
It was a Zofran.
Lay in a dark room. Yeah, Zofran. Good job.
Yeah. They gave it to me for anxiety.
Really?
I went through a weird stage of anxiety where I would like vomit or like feel like I was going to vomit because my anxiety got so bad. And they were like, well, we're going to give you Zofran. I just like, I don't like it.
I was on chemo, so I couldn't like anything. Tell yeah. whether nothing. Anything was working. It was horrible. Just like everything feels awful.
Too much, right? And you already were like probably thinking you're taking all this chemo in and all these medications that you didn't want more. It's like, fuck. And then you didn't want to eat, right?
No, I couldn't eat. Everything tasted terrible. Your tongue cells deteriorate. So you actually lose your ability to taste. But what's left is this bizarre sensation of the texture of food, but it's not accurate. So everything tastes like concrete.
Ew.
Like the texture of hard.
Really? Even ice cream?
Everything. Everything.
So how did you get
food? I found one food that tasted semi-normal. It was so weird. It's what not even it? A food I eat.
What is it?
Cottage cheese.
Ooh. Wow.
I lived off cottage cheese.
Is like, well, we win in one scenario. we got one person that loves us.
Yeah. Chemo patients.
Wow. You lived off of cottage cheese?
Lived off cottage cheese.
And then like, what about insurance stuff? Did they make you drink that stuff to stay like, so you didn't get too skinny?
Yeah, I mean, the doctors were worried I developed cachexia because I got down to about 96 pounds.
What's that?
It's where your body starts eating your muscle tissue in order to.
Oh, my God.
And it's kind of this, it's this awful cycle that once it starts, it's like a new metabolic pathway that the body uses, and then you can't stop it.
And it just starts eating all your muscles, and then you, like, atrophy?
So a lot of chemo patients will die from cachexia, not from, I mean, not that a lot of chemo patients die from chemo, but of those that do, a lot of times it's because of cachexia.
So you can die from the chemo?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's I didn't too hard know on your that. Body.
If it just, it can also, there's a lot of, I mean, there are a lot of interesting things about chemotherapy, but we don't need to get into that. It's
such a
weird wormhole of science.
I didn't know that the chemo could kill you. I thought that just the cancer would kill you.
No, I mean, there are certainly a lot of people that are very anti-chemo because they think that it
makes it worse.
Makes it worse. I would never be someone that would say that because I think, you know, it definitely saved my life. I think it should be used in most cases. But there are some interesting arguments around why it can be really harmful.
I have a friend whose dad is very sick right now with pancreatic cancer. Bladder cancer. And they wanted to do the natural route because he was already so weak. And, you know, and it obviously didn't work. I mean, I heard some people maybe it does, but, you know.
It depends on how far along you are, what stage the cancer's at. That's it's a whole interesting wormhole.
You're so strong. Mm. Like, you are really strong. I mean, to go through, if I have like a headache, I can't even like deal with life. I'm like, call an ambulance. Like, I can't even imagine getting chemo and then like battling every day. Did you spend most days in bed?
I spent most days in this tiny little bedroom. I blacked out the windows and so that I could just sleep.
Yeah.
I had this little bed and I would just sleep there. Yeah, most days. It was a really weird time. At the worst moments of chemo, those were the moments when the anxiety over death would come in.
Yeah.
Because I actually didn't have the resources to overcome the negative thoughts. I was too tired, too exhausted, too sick. And then because you feel like you're actually dying from the chemo, you worry that you will.
And so what did you do to help yourself in those situations?
I would meditate. I would journal. I would just try to remember I just have to make it a few more days because the second that I would start to feel better, that little glimmer of hope would come back.
Yeah.
And by the time you finish one round,
you're
like, all right, I'm going to do this. And then you go right back in and do it again.
And it's for a whole year?
My chemo was around 5 months. 4 or 5 months? 5 months.
So you do it five times.
Six.
Six times. And then you feel, so you get it, feel okay for a few days, and then you feel like shit for a week.
10 days, yeah.
10 days, just hell. Mm-hmm. Just awful. And then back
to. Then you come back to sort of normal. And just good enough.
Through it again. Oh my God.
And then my last chemo.
I'd be like, just blow my fucking brains out. I can't handle this. Just, can you just add extra Ativan, nurse, please? I just don't want to know anything. Isn't that the interesting thing, though, about those drugs? Is that, like, don't they kind of make you not care?
Yeah, it wasn't until number three. I called my mom. I said, I can't do this anymore. This is awful. And she said, Taryn, are you taking the lorazepam? And I said, no, I haven't been taking the lorazepam. She's like, Taryn, this is the time to take the lorazepam. Yeah. You take that lorazepam.
Yeah, you have to.
And so I started taking it, and it did help.
That's the one thing I will say. Like, I usually use CBD and ashwagandha root to calm myself down, but if I'm in a K-hole of anxiety, mm-hmm. I just dose myself with either, like, Klonopin or Valium, and your body just goes, all right, cool, so you're worried about dying? Like, now you're not worried about it anymore. Like, yeah. You're just going to go to sleep, and, like, if you do, oh, well, like...
And sometimes you need the sleep so that you can actually reset. Get through the next day. Yeah, if you're not sleeping, it just compounds.
You need to reset.
Yeah.
It's really hard. Fuck, I'm so proud of you. And then on top of that, you were going through crazy situation with someone, and I feel so bad.
Thank you.
We can't really talk about it, but.
Well, it's just, you know, I had a partner at the time, and unfortunately things with us didn't work out, and that was certainly challenging, but you know, I think you learn in those moments that you really do learn what you're made of, that, like, you can get through anything.
I just can't imagine, like, being sick with cancer and going through, you know, a breakup. Like, I can't imagine dealing with both of those, because, like, they say that a breakup is essentially like going through a death, especially if you've been with someone for so long. It's a grieving process. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you're dealing with the fucking cancer and all that. Like, jeez.
It's a lot of uncertainty.
It's a lot. Like, you are very strong.
Thank you.
Do you feel strong?
I do.
Good, because you are strong.
I didn't realize that I was as strong as I've never felt as strong as I do now.
You've always been strong, though.
I don't know. I feel like the little girl who's, like, climbing the mountaintop and always like, what's on the other side? I'm terrified.
Is that a snow in my face?
Yeah. And a lot of rocks falling everywhere. Yeah. That's how I've always felt.
Really?
But I think this situation did change my orientation with my own strength and my anxiety and a lot of things, because I got through it. And,
yeah.
You know, I did go through chemo in partnership, and that mm-hmm. was helpful. You know, that breakup really happened after I finished chemo and then mm-hmm. and was preparing for surgery and radiation. And so, you know, it didn't happen all at once.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a lot, certainly, mm-hmm. but that silly saying that I kind of hate, that life doesn't hand you anything you can't handle. It was like just the right string of events.
It's
to
like
where
we're
going to
break you, but not all the way. Like, we're going to break you so that you fucking are in so much pain, but, like, not totally, like, done.
Yeah.
We love that about life.
Right.
Just bend you till you're just about to snap, but you're not going to snap. You're just going to be real close.
Exactly. We'll just keep pushing you towards that little edge.
We love that. Thank you, life. Yeah. Grateful for that. No, but so you, and did you lose all your hair?
So I did a thing called cold capping, which
I saw you doing that, because I remember seeing your page, because I was following you on your journey, and I remember you putting ice packs and things.
It's like an igloo on your head, and it freezes your hair follicles, and the idea is when you freeze the follicles, the chemo can't get to them.
Wow, and it worked?
Well, I mean, I looked like something else, you
you
know?
Looked like that Barbie doll that Angelica played with. Like, I still have my hair just like in like sections.
There were massive bald spots everywhere. No. I mean, I had like a full receding man hairline, but the middle part covered it. So these, I'll show you, these are my
new
actual
growth.
Hairs.
Oh,
right
so
here.
That was your,
And then everything else is fake. extensions.
Oh my God. I was going to say your hair looks so luscious and full for like being a year out from cancer. Like, wow.
No, it's all fake.
Yeah.
I actually gave myself the extensions as my 1 year.
I love that.
Yeah. But the cold capping is amazing and not a lot of people know about it. So
yeah.
I'm happy that I shared it. I know a lot of other women who are going through cancer now and are using the cold caps.
And was it uncomfortable to have that? Because it's freezing, right? Like,
yeah.
I've done that. What's it called? The
cryotherapy?
No, not cryotherapy, but I did freeze the fat or whatever it's called. The what's it called? I forget.
I don't know.
Cool sculpting.
Oh.
So I did that one time on my thighs, and it was so fucking cold that I didn't even make it through.
Really?
I was like, take this shit off. Like, this is because they freeze your fat cells to the point that they die. And then they massage it like you're a piece of fucking meat and you pee it out. But I like couldn't handle it because it was so cold. So your head was freezing.
It was so cold. Yeah. But again, you're just kind of
out of it. So you didn't even care. You're like, my brain is frozen.
After 10 hours, your head is, you can't feel anything anyway. So you just just kind of suck it up and do it.
Do you sleep for that 10 hours usually or no? Because it's so uncomfortable.
No, because the caps have to come on and off every 20 minutes because the ice starts to melt. So there's someone putting them on and off your head.
Oh,
so you can't really sleep.
God.
Yeah. It's, ugh, you know.
Girl, you are a fighter.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
Oh, but I'm so proud of you and like your family's so happy too, huh?
They were so, so happy. This year, about this time last year, I had surgery where they went in, they took everything out. I still had tumors in my lymph nodes. So I was really concerned that I would have to continue on a new chemo drug. And I got the pathology call. It was the first week of November, and they said it's all gone. The chemo killed everything,
and they just took all the tumors out.
Yeah, it was just all dead.
Where were they? Just
left underarm,
in the arm. Do you have a scar in your arm? Or
it's actually on my breast because they went in through the breast.
Oh,
and then,
wow! Yeah. And then, so did you have to have your breasts removed?
I just had a lumpectomy. I had a very weird form of breast cancer called occult HER2 positive breast cancer, which basically means they cannot find the original source of the cancer, but they know it's breast cancer that's spread. So they could not find it in the breast. They tried. They poked and prodded this left breast everywhere to try and find where could this cancer have come from within the breast, and it wasn't there. So we did a lumpectomy, still no breast cancer in the breast. But yeah, it had already migrated to the lymph nodes. Really weird.
And usually when you get to your lymph nodes, that's pretty bad.
You don't like,
That's
ideally
really,
that doesn't happen.
Really dangerous. Like I know there's like it's not a high percentage of survival for that, right?
For breast cancer, it's actually quite good.
Yeah. For breast cancer.
It is,
okay.
Yeah.
Even
it
when
it
spreads
on the
to
cancer
the lymph node.
Type.
Okay.
You know, the thing that you just want to caution against with lymph node presenting cancers is once it's in the lymph nodes, it can go anywhere in the body. Because the lymph node system, it's all connected. So you just want to treat it quickly.
Oh, my God. And so they went in. They took all your little lumpies out.
Yeah.
And I remember you named your big lumpy Bob. Did you get to see it?
No.
I would have wanted that shit in a fucking jar, and I would have just put, like, a curse on it. Like, I would have been like, I need that shit in a jar.
Yeah.
To, like, keep in my house so I can, like, you know, hex it and make sure it never comes back.
That's funny.
How big? Like, did they tell you, like, when they took it out?
Well, it shrank quite a bit.
From the chemo, so it got smaller.
So it was like this, like, shriveled raisin.
Good
thing.
Piece of shit. That's what it deserves. Yeah, that's great.
Goodbye, Bob.
I'm melting.
Oh, what a world.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Fuck.
Yeah, but it made it easier to call the cancer something and turn it into a bit of a joke.
I know,
and
I
like,
saw
Bob,
you.
Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you, Bob. And that's such a good name because, like, who's named Bob? Let's
and no one's really upset. Like, no one named Bob is scary.
No.
You know?
And if you name someone Bob, like, what the fuck is that? Like, have you ever met a baby named Bob? Like, what is that? Like, not even short for Robert, just Bob. This is Bob the baby. Like, it's just be so weird. So no one should ever be offended by you calling it that. That's ridiculous. But, okay, so you made it through. I'm so happy. You just got your test, and you're going to go every 6 months and get, you know, checked. And they check thoroughly.
They do. I did an MRI this week.
Okay, so it's like a whole body?
Full body. They hook you up with contrast in your blood vessels so they can see anything light up. And when I went in for my scan, it was just last week, and I saw on the radiologist's face like a little bit of a puzzled look.
Oh,
and you start
to,
you know, but you're like, no, it could just be that he's like has a bad fart right now or something. You know, I don't know why he has a puzzled look on his face.
Right.
But when I got out of the radiology room, I stole a glance at the screen and I saw a bunch of white spots.
Oh no.
In the lymph node area. And you don't want white spots. White spots aren't good. So I spent 4 hours just trying not to panic and giving myself a pep talk that it's okay. I'm going to have to go back in. It's not gone. We're going to have to do this again. I've got this. It's going to be okay. I just kept repeating this in my head. And of course, I get to my oncologist's office and she's like, oh, no, honey, those are you were looking at the scan with contrast. Those are blood vessels.
Oh, my God.
You're fine. You don't have anything in there.
I would just be a wreck. Like, I already think I'm dying and I don't have anything. I'm like every day just checking my temperature with COVID, just checking my temperature every 5 minutes, like, beep, just every.
Sleeping
with a crucifix, like taking zinc. Like
you're doing all the right
doing
things.
Doing Zicam, no swabs, like just every, like, no, you know, I don't even really hang out with anyone unless they come to a podcast, but yeah.
Right.
And I make sure they're
glad you do.
Coffee, you know? Yes. I'm so glad to have you here. Like, I'm so glad to have you here in the podcast and that you're here.
Thank you.
Right?
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing.
I just have to say, yeah.
So it's annoying. It's a party.
But it is.
It's a total party.
It is a party.
And it does just challenge every aspect of concern and worry that I ever had, like knowing that I'm still here, and like given that gift. I had another girlfriend who I was going through chemo with at the same time, Tatiana Carrier. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever met her, but she was a clever TV host and worked kind of in the digital space and lovely person. And we got to know each other going through chemo together and sort of developed this friendship relationship through this process. And she passed away in August. And it was
from breast cancer or the chemo?
Yeah,
from the cancer.
From the cancer.
The cancer just didn't take to the chemo.
Yeah. And so I was devastated.
And you were working and you were together going through the same thing. And did she have the same kind?
Hers was a slightly different, same presenting stage as mine, but a different subtype. But yeah, it was weird. I mean, like all the way up through November when we had surgery around the same time and everything kind of looked the same for both of us.
Yeah.
And so it's just whenever I felt bad about what was going on in my life or
like, at least I know a buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. I always like, well, she's going through this too. And then I knew that things were getting worse for her, but I didn't know how bad. I really thought she was going to be okay. I mean, she was so optimistic. Whenever I was feeling really down, she'd be like, you got to positively visualize and we're going to make it through this and we're going to celebrate together and go to Joshua Tree and have a whole, you know, trip of celebration when this is all over. And so I just never doubted that she would get through it. So I was stunned when I heard the news in August. I was just absolutely flabbergasted.
Did it just spread or did it come back? It spread. So she was still doing chemo and then she went and
when the chemo doesn't work, you know, and it's continuing to
it just keeps
spread.
Going.
Yeah. It's
so
like
how does the chemo not work?
It, you know, cancer is like such a funny, weird thing. It's basically like a malfunctioning cell. And there's all these different subtypes within each cancer. And those subtypes matter a lot and can change your prognosis quite a bit. In my case, the HER2 positive breast cancer, it used to be a death sentence. You just didn't want it. But now they have this targeted drug that targets the HER2 protein, so it sends the chemo directly into that cell.
Okay.
In her case, it could just be that there wasn't enough targeted drugs for her particular cell types.
Oh.
So it was killing some of the cells, but not all the cells. And then the ones it wasn't killing were getting stronger and smarter. You know, because they learn how to
survive. Try to beat you. It's so weird that it's your own body. That's killing you.
Yeah.
But I don't get it. It's like your cells just get confused all of a sudden and they start trying to hurt you because they think they're protecting you.
They just keep growing. They just want to do what other cells do, which is divide and multiply, but they won't die. And the immune cells can't recognize them as harmful cells.
Why?
They look like normal cells on the outside. So that's why they're such clever little buggers.
Ew, I don't get it. It's like, where did it come from?
It's really a crazy story. The story of cancer is gnarly. But it's anything, like any kind of negative environmental thing or things that we're eating and putting in our bodies can lead to these slight alterations in the DNA of our cells, which can then cause a cluster of small cancer cells. All of us have cancer cells in our body, by the way.
We do.
We all have cancer cells.
Oh, great.
What you don't want.
My health anxiety is just like, Guess who's Googling cancer for 5 hours after you leave, Taryn? Me.
Oh my God.
I do not want to make you panic. But most people's bodies have the ability to naturally fight cancer cells. The reason why most cancer patients are older is because as we age, our body's they're not as good at finding these cells and getting rid of them. But things like intense stress.
Yeah. Oh, great.
I know.
Keep putting this making it worse. Things like stress, anxiety, negative thinking, you know, just poisoning your body by eating impossible burgers all day.
Yeah,
me basically just all right, well, great.
But you know how it is. There are people that live their whole life with that stuff and never get cancer. So
it's kind of crazy, right?
We have such a little understanding about it at this point. But I did find it somewhat ironic that the movie that I had been working on, I mean, I was not sleeping. I was really stressed in that 6 months before the release. And
you think that
I used to joke that it caused my cancer.
Oh my God. Okay, wait,
I don't know,
Wait. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Taryn Southern. We're going to talk about your film, I Am Human. Okay, be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, we're back. Okay, so your film, I Am Human, it looked fucking amazing.
Thank you.
It looked so futuristic and cool, and you directed it and created it. And tell us everything about what it's about, because it's so future. Is it on iTunes right now?
You can find it on Apple TV, iTunes.
Okay, great. Because I want to watch it, because I remember you posting about it and it wasn't out yet. And right. I didn't ever catch up.
It came out the same week of the pandemic. So
oh, great. Well, you guys now have something to watch because you've watched everything. We know that.
Yeah.
I Am Human film.
That's
okay,
right.
Directed by you, written by you, created by you.
I co-directed it with my friend Elena Gabby.
Okay.
And we also produced it. And we follow three patients who decide to undergo brain surgery and have these implantable brain interfaces. I'm doing a terrible job. I haven't talked about my movie in so long. Basically, we explore the future of the human brain by following three people with implantable brain interfaces.
And what is that exactly?
It's basically like the modern cyborg. These are people that have chips in their brain. You were actually talking about this a little bit on your last podcast when I was in the car on the way home.
Oh, was it the therapy for the depression?
Correct. So that's deep brain stimulation.
It is?
Yes. And what they do for people who are incredibly treatment-resistant depression, they'll open up your skull. They will pop a chip into, you know, whatever area of the brain is causing the depression. And then you're basically set up to run on an electric stimulator for as long as, you know, you need the treatment. And this chip stays in your brain. And you're basically a cyborg. It's
and how
super
do
cool.
people feel after that? And how does it affect these people?
Well, so areas like depression, obesity, anxiety, OCD, there's still a lot of research coming out about them. The research is compelling.
Okay.
But it's very well known. Deep brain stimulation is a very well studied area of medicine for Parkinson's patients.
Oh.
So if you take a Parkinson's patient who's not responding to medication, and you pop one of these chips in their brain and you stimulate them, their tremors stop. All of their anxiety and depressive, because a lot of that is also associated with Parkinson's, also tends to seize. Mm. Like, it's very well researched. There's over 100,000 people with Parkinson's that have these chips.
So they're doing the chips.
Oh, yeah.
And
they're
around. Is it curing it, or is it just kind of covering up the...
It's alleviating
effects,
the symptoms.
Right. Okay, great.
Which allows people to live their lives.
A better life.
Right? And for people who are treatment-resistant, depressed, or anxious, or whatever it may be, I mean, whether it's alleviating the symptoms or actually solving the problem actually doesn't matter to them. They just want to feel good.
Better. And so were the people in your documentary, what were they getting it for?
So one had Parkinson's.
Okay.
And she was an artist, so she couldn't do her art.
She was shaking. She couldn't paint or draw.
And she was incredibly depressed, couldn't get out of bed, had terrible insomnia. That's another big symptom of Parkinson's. You can't sleep. Mm. Another patient was a paraplegic. And he had been in a bicycle accident, paralyzed from the neck down, was told he would never walk again. And so he had a chip implanted along with 36 electrodes in his arm and hand so that he would be able to reanimate his arm using only his thoughts.
Did he do it?
You get to watch the movie.
Okay, watch the movie. So exciting.
And then the third one was a blind retiree from Canada who had this late stage retinal disease where he was rendered blind right as he was retiring. And it happened so quickly within a year. And so he had a retinal implant that would allow him to be able to see again.
Like replaced his retinas.
No, it goes inside of the retina. So it's like it's a chip. I mean, this is all very sci-fi, but it's
totally
real.
Sci-fi.
And it's here. And we have this technology, but obviously this technology raises a lot of big ethical questions and questions around what does this mean to be human? What's
right.
the future
right.
of society? And so we also explore those bigger questions in the film too.
And what made you be interested in this? Like what got you on this train?
I started taking a really keen interest in everything in the emerging tech space maybe 5 years ago. It was mm-hmm. when I was starting to tire of the YouTube career, because that's when we met. When
yeah.
you were doing Vine and I was doing YouTube.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
YouTube. Dad, this will be on YouTube. Anyway.
Which is great.
Which is great. We love YouTube. Yeah.
We still love YouTube.
We still love YouTube.
But I was really kind of, I was searching for something intellectually satisfying. Mm-hmm. And I just got really excited about everything that was happening in AI, in neurotech, VR, AR. I was just like, this is so cool. These are spaces without rules. I'm also slightly terrified by all of this stuff. So I want to learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just started learning about it and then applying my storytelling skills to those spaces. And decided that I just really want to focus on storytelling for emerging technologies. Like that, it just excites me. I don't know. It's weird. I feel like I get to learn things as they're happening and then figure out how to translate that for broader audiences.
I love that. And how did you find the people? And like,
it was quite a process. We had to go, you know, we had to get all of these institutions on board, which was challenging.
A lot of work.
It was a several year
and then
endeavor.
You got accepted into the Tribeca Film Festival.
Yeah.
My
you.
God, that's amazing. That's big.
Thank you.
It's very big.
I was pretty excited.
Yeah. And so did you win anything or no, just being in the festival?
Just
right?
in the festival. Yeah, okay. We didn't win an award.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
So
can't
biggest,
win it all.
No, it's the biggest high. Like it's such a great to even be accepted in there is great.
Yeah.
So do you know like a lot about, I had TMS done to my brain.
You did. What was that experience like for you?
And I've talked about this before on the podcast. It's called transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Yep.
So I don't really have depression. I'm not sad really as much, but sometimes because I have such bad anxiety, it causes depression because I'm like, why the fuck am I having such bad anxiety? And then it makes my life feel sad because I'm like, I can't get me live my life because of the anxiety, but not really like a sad person, more like just I'm always like panicky and overactive and, you know,
yeah.
ADD, ADHD. And so my friend, I tried all the different antidepressants. I've been on Effexor since I was 16. We were trying to add different ones, take the Effexor away, add this, do that,
Effexor?
Blah, blah. It's an antidepressant.
Got it.
So, but also an anti-anxiety. So like it works on both your serotonin and your, I'm going to say this wrong, non-epinephrine.
That's probably right.
Anyway, so basically it works on two receptors, not just serotonin, whereas like some of them just work on serotonin. So we tried to like supplement me with different things, Wellbutrin, Prozac, Cymbalta, Celexa, all these different things. I've tried like every drug and it wasn't having success. I was getting really sick. I'm very sensitive to a lot of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So my friend who's a psychiatrist, Dr. Josh Lichtman said, you know, you should go try TMS. There's like a huge success rate with it. And if there's no success, then it just doesn't do anything. So there's no bad repercussion from it. So I said, okay, I'll go try it. And I went and I did a series of what's called theta bursts, where they put these electric magnets on your head and it's like a knocking sound, like a, and you hear,
is that
like,
anxiety
like
inducing?
Like a woodpecker. Absolutely. For some people it is.
I just lost my tab.
Okay. Don't worry about it. It's like a woodpecker.
Okay.
Pecking on your skull.
Okay.
Slowly. And that's the anxiety protocol. And that's not covered by insurance. That's like out of pocket. So it's like super expensive.
Interesting.
But I did it because I was like, my health is worth it. And I did that. And I did this, the theta bursts for as long as I could afford it. And I noticed like I was slower, but I was slowed down. So like my anxiety couldn't get to where it was going. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So like I felt slower and I felt a little more tired, but I also noticed I wasn't having panic attacks. I wasn't, you know, jumping to the, you know, it feels like it just dulled my brain down a little bit. You know what I mean? Just slowed everything down. So that lasted for like 6 months.
Okay.
And then I would have really just needed to keep going back and keep doing it. But for me, I was kind of like, the place that I was going was really far away. And so I was kind of like, oh, I don't want to do the drive. And like, I was so tired. It's an at 45 minutes, oh, wow. You know, every time. And,
you know, special clinic.
Yeah. Yeah. And now they're everywhere. Okay. So, I mean, I was thinking actually of going back, but I ordered recently a product and I don't even know why I'm talking about it because I don't know if it's going to work or not, but it's called Alpha Stim. Have mm-hmm. you heard of Alpha Stim?
Yeah.
Have you heard anything good about it?
I haven't, but I can ask a few people.
Please do.
TDCS, right?
Yeah.
It's a transcranial direct stimulation.
Exactly. So that's exactly like, it's like a TMS light.
Yes.
And so I figured, oh, TMS worked for me, but I felt like it was a little strong.
Okay.
Because I would leave kind of, oof, I don't even know how I drove home. Alpha Stim connects behind your earlobes. And you can start it at like 200 watts or whatever and then go up and then you'll know like your hand twitching. When your hand twitches, just like in TMS, that's how they calibrate you.
Oh.
Like TMS, they'll do the magnets and as soon as your hand twitches or your lip moves, they know they're at the right spot.
Wow.
And that's why you don't go any higher or any lower. And so Alpha Stim works the same way. Your hand will like twitch, but you do it yourself at home.
You have to tell me how this works for you. And I will get the lowdown from some
Please
of my TDCS
do.
Friends.
Please do. I would love to know because I know there's a couple other ones. There's like something Wallace is another one. But anyway, I just heard about it because I had my brain scanned at the Amen Clinic. Okay. Have you heard of Dr. Amen?
No.
So I had my brain scanned at the Amen Clinic and
was it like an MRI scan?
It's a SPECT scan, which is a very different type of scan. It shows the activity of the brain and it shows trauma in the brain.
Right.
So they inject you with a dye and you lay on like a table and they do this. First you do like a couple exercises to get your brain like active, you know, like little just word exercises and number exercises. And then they lay you in the machine, they inject you with a dye and then they, do like a thing of your, they scan your brain and it shows the activity of your brain, like electrical impulses of how your brain's firing, what areas it's firing in, what areas it's not firing in. So I'm actually posting the video on it. It'll already have been out by the time this podcast comes out. I posted the video on it and basically my brain was full on trauma brain. Your brain is lit up in the top part of your brain's lit up in a diamond and it's called the PTSD diamond. So
wow.
Usually people that have been to war have it. Or people that have been under extreme stress and trauma their entire life. And on top of that, my brain was lit up in areas it's not supposed to be lit up. So parts of my brain, more of my brain is working than normal people.
That must have been comforting on some level for you to see.
This
is not just something I'm making up. Like this is part of my...
It's so comforting because your whole life you just think, oh, I'm just crazy. Mm. Like what's wrong with me? I'm going to the doctors for nausea. I'm going to the doctors because I'm shaking. I'm going to the doctors because my heart's pounding out of my chest. I'm going to the doctors for all the symptoms of what I'm dealing with and I'm getting told I'm fine.
Yeah.
And that's the worst. Like I'd rather it be something so that I can go, okay. And then this was my confirmation that my brain is fucked up and I have a big... dent in like the front of my brain, which is like a ADHD dent. When you have ADHD, it creates almost like a crevice in the frontal lobe. And so I have that. And also they can see your vagus nerve, which controls mm-hmm. mood, regulates mood. I know you know all about this, right?
No, but it's great.
And my vagus,
you know a lot.
My vagus nerve was completely almost not functioning.
Wow.
So I'm doing like daily exercises where you're like, yeah, you know, that like,
no, I don't
hold
tell
your,
me.
Hold your tongue to the top of your mouth. And just push your tongue to the top of your mouth. Just do that as you're sitting there watching TV for 15, 20 minutes and it stimulates your vagus nerve.
Wow.
Another thing that stimulates your vagus nerve. Shh. Do that for as long
wow.
as you want watching TV. Do it to your children. Do it to people you don't want like. Stimulates your vagus nerve. Gets your vagus nerve working.
That's brilliant.
Isn't that funny?
So cheap and easy.
And convenient, right? It doesn't cost
yeah.
any money. So all these little things I'm trying and you know, Dr. Amen is very like supplement friendly. And so we tried some supplements that weren't great for me. I don't do great with supplements. I just haven't. My body gets, you know, whatever. But
it's good. You have to be I think you have to be really diligent if you're going to do supplement work and do a lot of blood work and making sure that things aren't getting out of whack.
Yeah, and I'm also just like, I think I'm like not, I don't want to say allergic, but like I just have bad reactions to a lot of supplements. I've tried them and I either like immediately throw up or have like diarrhea or whatever. Mm-hmm. So some stuff just doesn't sit well with me. But
it's great. You'll do the Au Naturel.
I'm doing my, I have my Effexor. I have CBD that has the ashwagandha root in it. I take magnesium every night.
Great.
Isn't that magnesium great? That one's a great one.
Magnesium is the must take for anyone.
Like for your brain, like just so good, right? And your heart.
Even if you have no issues.
Even if you have no issues, guys, magnesium glycinate every night before bed, liquid gel, capsules, change your life. Yeah. So do that. And then I take a vitamin D every day. It's supposed to be great for depression.
And COVID prevention.
And COVID prevention.
Higher vitamin D levels.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then a vitamin B6. I try to take like a lot, but then I'm so sensitive that vitamin B6 actually amps me up too much. And then I get the like, I start to spin. I can't drink caffeine. So avoid all caffeine, like all that stuff. You know, you just do things, you learn. And
how's the EMDR been for you?
So I'm just starting.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. So I will have had, but when this comes out, I'll probably just be doing my first session. So I'm so excited about that.
So that is my favorite thing.
Tell me all about it. Tell me everything.
So I started doing EMDR work last fall as I was going through my separation and obviously still, you know, recovering and figuring out what the next steps were with treatment. And I found it to be immediately effective for me.
Yes, like, and I hear that from everyone.
Now, I will say, so EMDR, basically what it, there are different ways to do it. There is a version of EMDR where you're just physically tapping yourself in various places. And then there is a more technologically concentrated version of EMDR where you're hooked up to a machine. You're looking at a light going off in front of you. You've got headphones on with these audio sounds coming in through your auditory cortex and these vibrating kind of devices in your hands. And the idea is any person who's been through any sort of trauma has this electrical charge running through them as they're reliving the trauma. Mm-hmm. And while you go through this therapeutic process and you're reliving the trauma in whatever form, the therapist basically turns on all of these sensory inputs and it basically overrides the brain's ability to, like, it strips the charge from the trauma. Mm-hmm. Because you're overloading your system with so much data.
So did you do the ones that you hold?
I did the one with all the electronics, yeah.
Does it work when you don't do it with the electronics?
I don't know, because I've never done it that way.
Oh, crap.
It's okay. I mean, try it, but I have a great person for you if you want to try the other version. I mean, it was effective from day one for me.
And then how often do you have to do it?
I would go back, let's see, last fall I was going once a week, and then early this year by February I was like, I'm totally good. I don't need this anymore. And so I stopped going for several months, and then I started going again actually when my girlfriend passed away, because I really felt that was hard for me. And so I started going back in, and it makes such a difference in how you relate to what's going on up here.
Like, so what do they do? Do they ask you questions about your trauma and then just do it while you're doing...
Yeah, and a big part of it is focusing on what's happening in your body as you're thinking through these deep fears. You know, you'll give things a rating, like what is, on a scale from 1 to 10, how intense is this feeling right now, and where does it exist? Is it in your chest? Is it in your spine? Is it in your legs? Where is it? And then you focus on it, and then they turn on all of these devices while you're just focusing on the feeling. And oftentimes I find that for a brief period, while all of these noises are happening in your ear and the vibrations are going off and the lights are spinning, I get super worked up. I actually get almost like to a 10.
Oh my God.
And then all of a sudden, just dissipates. And I feel this incredible calm.
Wow.
Like incredible, incredible calm.
I am so excited to try it.
I'm so excited for you.
I'm a little worried because I'm doing it over Zoom and I kind of think it's something that should be done in person. But
I've got someone for you.
You do? Yep. Are they in the area?
They're amazing. They're in Brentwood.
Okay, that's fine.
So I know it's a little bit of a trek.
That's great, but worth it. Yeah. Oh, they're amazing. God. Okay, okay. Yeah, because I think it's more of an in-person.
I'm
going to try it over the Zoom, but I'm a little skeptical about this doing it over Zoom. Even like, I mean, I don't mind therapy over Zoom, but I always feel like it's like a little bit less personal and it's hard.
Well, and so much of it is the therapist also being intuitive and seeing you.
You're real.
And a big part of EMDR, what's interesting, really well-trained therapists, I mean, they they watch your eye movements because whenever we get really worked up about something, our eyes tend to shift in really funny ways. It's like because the brain can't process or hasn't yet created a narrative that feels good about that situation. So the eyes dart around. And so they'll find that. They're like, wait, hold that. What's going on here? Where is this in your body? All right. Now we're going to turn it on.
Can pinpoint it?
It takes me a little while. Sometimes like, I'm like, I don't know. I just feel paralyzed everywhere.
I'm like, I'm just stressed. It's in my brain. My brain. Can you turn the brain off? What can we do?
But you will start to become more aware of shallow breathing in the chest, like a heaviness in your chest
which I have all the time. Is it COVID or is it anxiety? That's my favorite game to play with myself. That's my favorite. Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. You will develop an awareness, I think, around the link between your brain and body more in EMDR than in any other kind of therapy.
Okay. So I'm so excited.
I'm really excited
about it. And then also I'm just like so excited about like watching your movie and learning more about, do you guys talk about anyone who's gotten the implant for depression and stuff? Like, and how has that worked out?
We don't talk about it in this movie. We do, I guess we kind of briefly talk about it, but not extensively. I mean, that's, if we did a sequel, I would definitely go into all of that. We're trying to set up a TV series version of the film. So that would be really cool to be able to follow all of these different patient stories from around the world. Yeah. You know, there's someone in North Carolina that just had the implant, 33-year-old, who treatment-resistant addiction on morphine, and had this thing implanted and immediately, like, addiction-free.
And does it change your personality or like?
So this is the big question, right? Okay. If you're putting something in your brain,
right,
it's actually manipulating the signaling. All our brains are is just a bunch of electrical signals. That is it. Right. Thoughts are just a series of electrical signals.
Yeah.
Does it change who you are to have this thing in there? And is that a bad thing? Right? Like, couldn't we also make the argument that Brittany or Taryn, who are this like kind of amalgamation of years of neural pathways that have been set a certain way.
Yeah.
But if we start doing a ton of meditation and we start doing EMDR, it might take a really long time, but we'll start to change those pathways. Yeah. That's just changing the electrical signaling.
I just become totally not funny. I'm like, hi guys, welcome back to the podcast. Just so boring. And like,
well, none
that's
of us
like my
that
biggest
happens.
Fear. Cause I'm like, part of my anxiety, I think, is like what makes me like goofy, because my brain is just firing on all cylinders all the time.
Well, and you're seeing, I actually think that you're seeing all of the funny patterns about human behavior, which is what makes you so funny.
And I make fun of myself a lot because I just looked at my nightstand before I came up here and I have like an oximeter to check your pulse rate. I have a blood pressure cuff. I have a cardia heart rate EKG machine. I have a bunch of Zicam. I have a crucifix.
Like a true comedian. Right?
Nothing's funnier than Jesus. Like, oh, I'm like, what the fuck? My husband's like, this bitch.
Aww.
Oh my God, it's crazy,
what
right?
What do you think it is about people in comedy who tend to, I mean, there's so many of us who have anxiety disorders.
I know. Or it's weird. It's like, you just go through so much that at one point you can either completely break down and become like a psycho, or it's make it funny. Because it's like the only way to deal with
it's therapy.
It's your own therapy is to like be like, ah, it's hilarious. Like I get to the point with my anxiety where I get mad at it and I'm just like, and I make a joke out of it. I'm like, yeah, totally. We're totally going to have a heart attack while we're driving. That's hilarious. Like, you know, like you have to make it, you know, and I'm always like liking anxiety memes and then people are posting them and people are like, that's not funny. Like I have blah, blah. I'm like, bitch, this is how I fucking cope with this shit.
Do you have a name for your anxiety?
No,
just name your anxiety.
Really?
It's a good one. It's I think it's like naming my cancer Bob.
Really?
It minimizes.
But I feel like it's
contains like contains it.
I wish it was, I wish I felt it was separate than me, because it doesn't feel separate than me. It feels like it is me.
That's why you have to name it. Maybe it won't feel separate.
It's
a step you can take to start to create a separation narrative.
Yeah.
I named mine Mr. Scary 4 years
ago. Mr. Scary.
And so whenever it happens, it's so overwhelming, but I'm like, Mr. Scary, stop.
Yeah.
You've come to visit me and I don't want you here.
Stop being so scary. My husband calls me WCS. Maybe that's what I'll call it. Worst case scenario. Because I think of the worst, everything.
Yeah.
Like everything.
You also realize though that that is an underpinning philosophy of stoicism. So that's not necessarily a bad thing.
What does that mean?
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
I would be interested
in what happens if you actually like turn that into a positive narrative for yourself, which is like, you know what? I expect worst case scenario.
All the time.
And when worst case happens, like, I'm pretty well prepared
for it. I'm ready for it.
I'm ready. And when it doesn't happen, I have this pleasant bit of surprise.
Yeah. I'm always shocked. When I get on a plane and it lands without it exploding, I'm like, didn't expect that to happen. Exactly. Like when we fly private sometimes, and there's like one time we had a pilot who's like 105, and I'm like, no co-pilot, just you, buddy. You, how's the blood pressure? Looking a little red today. Like, if he has a heart attack, who's going to fly the plane? Nina Dewina? Like, I don't think so.
I would love to see that.
Oh, my God. I'm like, who has plane flying skills? Like, I freaked out.
Yeah. No, anyway. You're a modern stoic.
I did read that about, though, people who are hypochondriacs and anxiety ridden and are, like, worst case scenario people are actually, they live longer. Because they're constantly checking. They're constantly over-prepared for everything.
Conscientious.
So conscientious. Like, yeah. I want to be a little less conscientious. That could be nice.
It's great.
That could be nice a little bit. I actually was like, maybe I get like a half a lobotomy. Can I get like half where I'm like still functioning, but like not going to the doctor every day?
Yeah.
But yeah, they say that they live longer because...
So there you go.
They worry about everything. You
know, just take every little bit of positive... that spin, because that's all this is. Like, it's all, this is all fake. Everything is not real.
I know. And it's so scary, right? We live in an illusion.
I just wake up and I'm like, I feel like shit today. Everything sucks, but that's okay. I'm gonna tell myself a story that feels better, and even though I know it's not real, part of my brain will just like the story.
Yeah,
and it will feel a little bit better.
Exactly. We can just make it up.
That's right.
I'm just going to start making it up. Like, you don't have anxiety. You feel great, bitch. Like, just
well, this is what I always say now. To myself. You're not anxious, Taryn. You're just really excited.
I love that.
And because it feels similar.
Yeah, it does.
There's a slightly similar feeling. And so I can trick my body.
It's true. Because when I get overly stimulated, even in a happy way, even if I'm like so excited, like on vacation, I'm having a lot of fun, boom, panic attack.
Yeah.
Because it's just overstimulation. My brain goes, it's like the it's like the Honeycrisp guy. Like, he's just in my brain like, too much sugar. Ah! Like, he
your
just freaks
poor
out.
Poor little physiological system.
So psycho. It's like, like, I have like a piece of chocolate and I'm like, like, it's like, just like a sight. Like, I'm seven. Like, it's like, can't I have like, you have to like water down my apple juice.
So like, if you have like a really coffee, it's just like,
oh
no,
my God. It's 911 is what it is. Even if it's like a light coffee, even if it's like one of those shitty frappuccinos that's mostly like, oh my, any kind of caffeine. I'm the one keeping the Coca-Cola caffeine-free industry alive. Like, I'm like, can I get the caffeine-free version? Everyone's like.
It's great. It's great.
It's horrible. But anyway, I've loved having you here. I want everyone to follow you.
Thank you
just
so
Taryn
much.
Southern on
Taryn
Instagram,
Southern on Instagram, YouTube, all the places.
Twitter. And that's Taryn, T-A-R-Y-N, guys, because I know some people don't know how to spell me. Taryn Southern, just like Southern Comfort, your favorite drink, and not sponsored by this podcast. But Taryn Southern, follow her. Go watch her film, I Am Human.
Yes.
And it's really, it looks so cool and futuristic.
Thank you so much.
And how cool is it? Like, you beat cancer, you directed a movie, you're alive, you're killing it.
Thank you. Literally. And I have a podcast now that you're on.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
I'd love for your, I'm doing her your podcast fans now. To listen to it, because it's going to be
And
great.
Make sure, and what's your podcast called?
When Things Go South.
Oh, wow, perfect. Same thing. Same fucking my everyday in my life when things go south. Well, guys, make sure to check that out and make sure to stay tuned next week for another fun episode of Worst First. We'll see you later.